Well, hello, Elise Castle.
Hey, Mike Jensen.
So here we are. Season 3 of And Just Like That is happening.
And Just Like That, it's happening. Hold on quick, but hold on.
Yeah.
Patti LuPone.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much we want to get into
it. We don't have to get into it. I just wanted to acknowledge the fact that we talked about her in our last episode. I'm assuming we said nice things, or not nice things, but I'm assuming we didn't say anything negative, and just that, you know, she's kind of like a Broadway person. And a New Yorker article just came out that was an interview with her. And listen, I get that Patti LuPone, you know, says it like it is a lot, or isn't afraid to say what's on her mind. But all I'm going to say is that she did too much, and she said some really awful things, and we are not happy with Patti LuPone. So I just, if you're listening to last week's episode, just know that that came out before the New Yorker article.
Editor Mike here. It's worth noting that Elise and I made this recording merely hours before Patti LuPone actually did release an apology letter. It's worth reading if you have a chance to check it out. All right, back to the episode. I will say that according to the, because I never watch Coming Up, I never watched like this season on, but I did because I sort of felt like it was my job-ish, just to like see where things were going. And it does look like I was right. It does look like she's going to be playing the character that I thought she was going to be playing. So we'll see what happens when we get to there. But yes, acknowledging that things are a little different right now than they were 2 weeks ago when we recorded our Coming Up on episode.
Yeah, in the words of Jack McFarland, shut up, Patti LuPone.
Yes. Not a bad motto to live by.
No, not at all. And so we just wanted to acknowledge that Patti LuPone needs to take a step back.
So we're here to discuss the episode Outlook Good. It was written and directed by Michael Patrick King. I don't have a DVD summary because it doesn't exist. But yeah, we have our first episode of season 3. We open on a kitten.
Well, real quick, something I noticed is that in the did you watch the previously on?
I did, yeah.
Okay, there was no Che.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it, but also like there was no Che. And I just, something of note.
Yeah, it's interesting because a little bit of what I will talk about will have to do with Michael Patrick King's, you know, the official and Just Like That podcast, because I did listen to it.
Me too.
They never tell me what I want to know. They never like break down the scenes like I want them to. They're always just kind of like, and then there's this, I don't know. It's fine. Like, it is what it is, but it's never what I want it to be. And they do... I'm very back and forth on the idea and what they say about the character of Che, because they're sort of like, when Skipper was gone, Skipper was just gone. We didn't talk about Skipper. And I'm like, well, all due respect to Skipper, Skipper wasn't in the opening credit sequence. And I get that we don't have a technical opening credit sequence of this show, but Che was a character that was like a featured character for 2 full seasons. So I'm a little bit back and forth on how I feel about how they treat that character.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I mean, I almost would have appreciated more if they would have said, like, you know what? We hadn't done this in a while and we tried some new things and the feedback was these things weren't working. So we wanted to give you all what you wanted and that was it.
Yeah.
Like that would have been better.
I agree with that. Yeah. But we have what we have. And you know, we have Carrie addressing a postcard to Smithfield, Virginia.
Yeah. Did you... Her handwriting. It looks like Andy's handwriting from Toy Story. When he like,
oh, funny,
writes.
I didn't notice that.
It's just very childlike, and I don't know if she's doing that on purpose, you know, because she is just sending these postcards with a heart. That's what I noticed.
And we see a magic eight ball, and it's really funny that, like, I know that Outlook Good is a saying from the magic eight ball, but I actually didn't put it together even in this moment.
No, I didn't even really notice the magic eight ball.
And it's interesting how this looks like a bigger take on her old closet. Remember in like when we did our last episode that I was like, it looks like it's her closet, but it must not be. It must be the new one. It's a very similar feel of like bedroom into walk-in closet.
Yeah, I was a little bit confused. I at first I was thinking, where are we? Yeah, I mean, I was kind of confused also by her outfit.
Sure.
It was a full tulle outfit, and I wasn't sure if it was indoor or outdoor clothing.
Right. It's like a nightgown.
Right.
And she's disarming her own alarm system, and I do wonder if this will become a new famous stoop. Like, I know that the person that lives in the stoop at the old address likes to sometimes come out of the door and say, just remember, this isn't Carrie's apartment, this is my apartment.
Right,
and
yeah.
I sort of wonder if this will be a new stoop that everyone goes to. And we have a quick segue to Hot to Go, and now we're at a lady bar.
Yeah, Miranda is at a lady bar, which is what they call it. And
that's why I call it that. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. And in case you're wondering, where is that? I'll tell you. It is Motel Notel on 210 Avenue A at East 13th Street in the East Village. Eater is doing that thing again where it's like everywhere.
I wondered about that.
Yeah, so that's really exciting for us. In real life, note from Eater, Motel Notel is celebrating its television appearance by offering a cocktail special for the summer, the Lady Pond. It's vodka, orange, vermouth, cranberry, lime, and apple shrub for $12.
I don't know how that sounds, but...
Well, it's not for you, Mike.
I was going to say the Lady Pond probably isn't for me. And, you know, she talks about no one coming up to her and it's like law school, but without the penises. So not law school. I don't know. I don't get that joke.
I think law school.
It's fine. I don't have to get it. But I'm like, what?
I'm wondering if it's because maybe law school tends to be very male dominated.
Sure. Okay. That makes sense.
And she ran up a mocktail tab. So way to stay sober.
Of $37. I don't know what drinks would get you to $37 as a total, but I'm going to let it go.
I will tell you right now. Because she is drinking phony Negronis, and if she has had three of them, she would be at about $37.
I guess so. It's just an interesting number. And maybe someone is smiling at Miranda, but the last one was into Charlotte.
Yeah, or maybe Carrie.
Yeah, and Carrie got a postcard, and we have a quick moment of sending Aiden vintage postcards from New York.
Yeah, it's their way of honoring, it's her way of just saying, I love you, by still honoring the no communication.
Which I guess that I didn't necessarily remember the no communication. Like, I didn't know that was a thing. I knew they weren't going to see each other maybe for 5 years.
Well, but... and listening to that podcast, they kind of say that that was the point. Like, it was up to people's interpretation of what this 5 years will mean.
Sure. Yeah, her relationship was on back order for 5 years. And we've moved from a potential smile to a definite smile and waving, so the girls are leaving.
Yeah, the lady is now waving at Miranda, and Miranda goes over to talk to her.
It's Cassandra. Yeah, it's Brady's old babysitter, Cassandra Walsh.
And then Brady comes in on the bike and just waves
sort of smiles.
And
yeah.
Just drives through the bar. No, he doesn't.
And we get a good amount of information kind of quickly that the brownstone has been sold. Mm-hmm. Brady is in a loft with his dad and Miranda is in an Airbnb in the village. She's a lesbian now. And then Cassandra's girlfriend is there. And Miranda announces that she's in the program and gets another phone in Negroni.
So... I did think it was interesting that Michael Patrick King acknowledged that it was very quick for them to sell that brownstone.
Yes. But that was the other thing that I was unsure of watching this, was that I was like, how much later is this? I couldn't figure out if it was a year later, if it was a day later. He says it was a month or two later that this season is starting, which throws everything into a little bit of chaos for me, because then I'm like, this seems like this is happening right now. Which means that last season that was on like 2 years ago just happened. The timing confuses me a bit, but I'm letting it go because it makes my brain hurt.
Yeah, Sex and the City has never been good at timing and acknowledging timing. And I will say the one thing I really do love about the podcast is that they do acknowledge the ridiculousness of things and that it's almost intentional at points. And saying like, yeah, I don't know how, maybe she just got a great offer on that brownstone. The one thing I did just want to touch on that I found interesting is she says, I'm having a mocktail because I'm in the program, which is something that like people who are in 12-step programs like say they refer to it often as the program. But I would never say that to someone who doesn't know me, A, doesn't know me super well, and B, may not have any sober reference. You know?
Sure.
Like, I would just say, oh, I'm sober now. Like, I just wouldn't expect someone else for me to be like, oh, I'm in the program to, like, know what that is. Like, they might just be like, the program, and walk away and be like, I don't know what's going on there.
I didn't receive a program when I entered this facility.
Yeah, she's you're in the program. Yeah, it's like her headshot's in there. Yeah, my bio.
Yeah. So we cut to Seema in bed, and I wrote her computer rings, and she wakes up saying her own name.
Yeah, two things, though. She's asleep in heels. Before we know what's happening, all I see is Seema asleep in heels, which, no hate, I did that a lot in my 20s, with cigarettes and an ashtray.
Yeah.
Which made me nervous.
I wrote it. I wrote, she likes it. We'll get to it when we get to it. But she thinks it's going to be Ravi, but it's
Arnold, which my computer consistently tried to make me say Arnold.
Hey, Arnold.
Mihir Kumar. He was in the TV show Elsbeth, along with other things. That's a TV show that I love. And she's clearly been waiting a while and is being bitchy, which he says bitch away, but she's good. And I wrote, she lights a cigarette in bed, which I think will make Elise nervous.
Yeah, we meet, I think that's Ravi's assistant, right?
I believe so. That's what it makes sense.
Yeah, and I love the way, I know this is how people from other countries say it, but I love it when people say schedule. And he says schedule. I think it's an English thing.
I believe so.
Yeah. We'll have to ask Madonna. And yeah, I just wrote, don't smoke in bed, Seema. That's a fire hazard.
And then we hear sirens. Yeah. So there was a fire.
Cue to a fire truck. That's what happens.
And only the mattress went up, and we have cutie firefighter Joe Bach. I felt the need to write his name down because I thought he was cute.
Okay. Do you want to tell us more about him?
No.
Okay, back to the episode.
And she's very lucky, but she disagrees because of her hair, and it's fine. But I'm like, no, girl, you're very lucky.
Right, but her hair did catch a little bit on fire there. And nothing is worse. Oh, a lot of things are worse than this, but the smell of burnt hair is terrible.
Oh, yeah, it's terrible. I'm going to tell this story really quickly, but I once worked at a restaurant, and they had put candles behind the bar, which they didn't usually do. And one bartender had like hair like down to her waist, and she like leaned back and her hair caught on fire behind the bar. And so, of course, she like ran, and we're like, well, she's done for the day because her hair's on fire. And she came up from the office about 10 minutes later and with office scissors had given herself the cutest bob haircut I've ever seen in my entire life. And I was like, way to turn lemons into lemonade.
Yeah, good job. Sometimes we don't know what we really need in life, but yeah, it also is really, I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but it's pretty gross, but waiting tables and there's a candle in the restaurant and you go to bust a plate and then you burn your arm hair and it smells
all the
and
time.
You try to pretend like
all
nothing happened and hope they don't notice.
I'm like, you're welcome. Enjoy that as you sit here waiting for your check.
It happens so not gross.
And it's closing time at the Lady Bar and Amy Winehouse is playing. And now we have Rosie. There's nothing but randos at the bar.
Well, we must acknowledge that I know we talked about this before, but I did predict this early on. So I am a Sex and the City seer.
Yeah. And Rosie says she wouldn't classify Miranda as rando and nor IU and very nice grammar and... Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much we want to get. Rosie's in town all week for a world conference for compassion of the unhoused.
Yep, her name is Mary. She's from Winnipeg. That's a lie. She's from a small town outside of Winnipeg.
Which I did look up. This is a very, very small town in Manitoba. And she has a hotel room. And do you want to go back?
Miranda, this is how 2020 starts.
But also, we don't have to get into this, but I think it's an interesting thing to like be the person in the bar at close... I just don't feel like, does this really happen anymore? And maybe this happens for like people that are my age and think that, because I feel like everyone meets online now. Like I don't, do people meet in bars?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want that to be true. I'm so not a part of the scene. I can't really comment on it.
I mean, I think people definitely meet online more, but I think if you're at a bar and you are drunk and someone else is there, even though I don't think either of these people are drunk. But I mean, like, if you're at the bar and you see someone, like, I think people still talk to strangers and go home with them.
Okay, good.
Once again, this is how 2020 starts.
So we cut to Lisa and Herbert, and it's sort of an awkward go back to sleep, I'm trying to moment.
Yeah, she's being spooned by him, and it looks uncomfortable, but she's going to go work on her PBS presentation.
And there's dessert on the counter, which I don't think would actually happen.
No, but they even talk about in the podcast how that kitchen is just supposed to be like the ultimate kitchen.
It is ridiculous. Like we're barely seeing it here. When we get to it later, I'm like, that kitchen is amazing. And now Miranda's waking up and we get Mary saying that she's never experienced anything like that. It felt electric and natural. And then we get the real kicker or kind of a 1-2 punch here.
And it was her first time. And Miranda says, with a woman. And she says, with anyone.
Because?
She's a nun. And this felt very old school Sex in the City.
Yeah, for sure. And I will say that I did once accidentally flirt with a priest.
Well, that's okay. Where were you?
I was at a bar. I was at a bar in Boston. And I was having one of those nights that I probably had more like in my 30s where I was like, well, if I'm going to flirt with anyone, I'm going to find the hottest person and flirt with them. And I set my eye on this one particular guy and like... We were having conversation and it was going well. And like 30 minutes in, we were doing like, what do you do for a living? And he said that he was in public housing. Now, for those that don't know this, public housing, which begins with a PH, is oftentimes a metaphor or a code word for priesthood.
Oh, was this a gay bar?
It was.
Well, yeah. Then it's not your fault. Like, it's not it's not like you went to mass and just started like cruising. You were at a gay bar flirting with someone. He asked to be he was there to be flirted with, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was asking for it.
Mike.
And now some lady is yelling at Charlotte and Lisa in the park. And it's funny because, like, this character actually has a name and the actress is Nancy Shane. And I suppose it shouldn't be so surprising that she's yelling at Charlotte and Lisa, because she did once yell at Samantha outside of Fashion Week after her friend threw paint on her and they both screamed, "Fur is murder."
Oh.
This is the same actress that did that in the movie, just for the record.
Well, maybe she needs to stop yelling.
Yeah, she's a very yelly kind of character.
Yeah.
And the vet said Peanut's second sacral vertebrae is shattered. Did I write that right?
I have no idea. This woman is just very mad at Charlotte and Richard Burton because he was unleashed, apparently, and jumped on her Peanut.
Yeah. And even in the moment, I'm like, I don't know that this was real. Like, I don't know. She seems like a not reliable witness to her own story.
Yeah. And she is fat shaming Richard Burton.
She is, which is also kind of a sign where I'm like, well, Richard Burton, not that you should talk about any dog being fat, or it doesn't matter because it's a dog, but like, Richard Burton isn't. I don't know. Like, it was a weird thing where I'm like, I feel like we're setting up that this is not a real story.
No. And it's also, but I think it's more so to show how people are protective of their dogs and their dogs' behaviors. And listen, I love dogs. Love dogs so, so much. But it's very interesting working in a restaurant with dogs outside, because I would say 90% of them are amazing and they bring a smile to my face. And 10% of them just really ruin it for everyone. And it's not the dog's fault, because they don't want to be at a restaurant. They want to be home.
No dog wants to be at a restaurant. I mean, some of them behave well when they're there, but they don't want to be there.
No, unless you're feeding them.
Sure. And we have sort of like do you have witnesses? And she was alone, which Lisa finds not surprising. And then we're in Charlotte's kitchen. And immediately I'm like, oh, this is going to be the believe the women scene.
Yeah, Charlotte and Rock are in the kitchen. And I say, Rock is breaking down Amazon and Shein boxes, which I think your family is rich. Don't buy fast fashion. I'm very surprised Rock is okay with this.
Okay, well, you'll get there. And Lily enters and we have the fast fashion and the dirty socks.
Mm-hmm. Yep, so I was right.
And we find out there's a friends and family dress rehearsal on Thursday, and Charlotte asks why she's leaving the gallery 2 hours early, and it's because it's a privilege to be invited.
Yeah, and also Rock says Lily is ILY for the boy in the class she plays piano for. I was right again.
Yep, there you go.
Remember I said that in the last episode?
Yeah.
And you are right too about the Believe Women soundbite not being about that, but I am never right, so I just want to point out that I am very right a lot in this episode.
I got you. You deserve that.
I actually wrote, I'm a genius.
And we find out that the guy that she likes is 20. I don't know how old Lily is supposed to be at this point, though.
I'm assuming freshman in college, right? Or no?
Okay,
is she still
sense.
In high school? I don't remember.
No, I could say, I would think that she'd probably be in college. Once again, the timing is weird, because I feel like last season she wasn't, and this is just a couple months later.
Right, but she didn't actually apply for colleges, and I feel like that would be a really big thing.
And we have the, like, I love you too, and I'll miss you all day, baby, and Harry will pretend that she was talking to him. We get to Seema saying that she almost died waiting for FaceTime, and I suppose we just have to talk about the hat.
We do, and I'm going to talk about it, because I have an article pulled up.
Okay.
I said, well, my initial thought was just, okay, Carrie's hat, very Miss Muffet, looks like a nipple from the back. So this hat is designed by Mariam Kehani, I think. It's Keyhani. And they refer to it as the cloud hat. In this USA Today article, it says it's being paired with a brown, pink, and cream-colored dress from Aussie Clark, which she ties together with Dr. Scholl's white slides.
So, okay.
But those Dr. Scholl's white slides are kind of like a timeless piece that a lot of people have been wearing for years. They're like a fashion, the wood slide. Yeah, and Michael Patrick King talks about just like letting the hat happen and just understanding, like knowing that people are going to accept it. It'll become a meme. It'll become a thing. Like, you know, Sarah Jessica saw it and was like, yes, Carrie needs that. It's about 420 pounds, I believe. So it's not as, I thought it was going to be like thousands of dollars.
Oh, I was like, it doesn't look that heavy.
Oh, no, I mean, sorry. Yes, it weighs 420 pounds.
And I will say that, like, Seema's being ridiculous with her cone. She's, like, literally, like, if you watch it, she's, like, gesturing with her ice cream cone. She's just, like, it's, like, sideways. She's just, like, throwing it around.
I thought they were eating gelato, but it is sherbet.
Sherbet, yes. And they're in Washington Square Park.
Lots of NYU grads.
Yeah, so it's graduation season. That was the other thing that I was like, all right, so we are placing this in late spring, basically right now.
Mm-hmm. And Carrie talks about how her and Aiden have been in each other's life for a long time. Oh, wait, sorry. Seema wants proof that Ravi loves her.
Which is, I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, if you need proof that someone loves you, then I think you're maybe in the wrong relationship.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily, I mean, I think maybe this is what love is to Seema, like her love language. I think what she needs is proof that he's going to show up for her.
Sure, that makes more sense.
Because someone can love you and not know how to show up for you. And it's just you're not being loved the way that you want to be loved. And that's not saying that you don't deserve, she definitely deserves someone that loves her and knows how to show up for her. And, you know, she's jealous that Carrie has that. And Carrie reminds her that her and Aiden have been in each other's life for a long time and it wasn't always that way. And Seema is someone that Mike and I have talked about being a Samantha, but in this moment, I thought maybe she's more of just a combination of who all the women were before when they were younger and single. It feels like Seema's kind of asking all the same questions that the four ladies did in Sex and the City.
And it's also interesting to me that we're setting up this idea that Carrie is so confident in her relationship, but I don't feel like she really is. I think we're going to get to where she does have a lot of questions about what's happening in her relationship.
I think what she sees is a woman whose partner said, I'll see you in 5 years, and she's just trusting it's all going to be okay.
So now we're at the presentation with Lisa, and it's a series that's celebrating 10 unknown, unsung Black sheroes, and we have talk of Bessie Coleman, who was essentially the African-American Amelia Earhart. I did some reading on her. It's a fascinating story. She was the first African-American and first Native American to hold a pilot's license.
Wow.
She had to get her license in France because we did not license female pilots in the United States at the time. I would watch this docuseries, I guess, as part of what I'm saying. I think it's very interesting.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
And Isha and Cheryl had a thought, but first Lisa's phone rings and it's Herbert, so it must be urgent and he wants to know if he's cool.
Yeah, because his new campaign manager, Chauncey, so we were reminded he's running for comptroller. I forgot about that.
Yeah, same.
And so Chauncey just says he needs to be cool.
And Lisa's whole point is like, you're running for comptroller. There's nothing cool about that. And he thought the meeting would be over by now, but apparently Isha and Cheryl were 45 minutes late, which is not cool. And back in the screening room, we get to a pretty quick thing of like, you should swap out one of the choices for Michelle Obama. And I can't tell if this is against the point of the program or if she just doesn't know how to get to her. Because I kind of can't tell from Lisa's point of view, I don't want to do this because it's not what my show is about, or I can't do this because how would I get a hold of Michelle Obama?
I think it's a mix of both because she does say she's not unsung, she's very sung. So I think in that point we realize like you're completely missing the point. And on top of that, how am I going to get this person? So I think it's like, it's just more, I think, to show that the other two are out of touch and aren't really even understanding what Lisa's doing here.
And we get to formally meet Grace, who I guess is the editor, and this is Quincy Tyler Bernstein. She's in a bunch, like Rachel Getting Married, The Good Wife, Evil. I've known her from a few different things. I hope we get more of her because I enjoy her.
You guys go way back.
We go way back. And we have, okay, so here are a couple of things. And once again, I continue to enjoy this show. My only issues is that every once in a while, the dialogue feels like dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Like we have the whole like, this is going to be fun and done. Want to get lunch? I'm fasting. And I'm like, that's okay, that's fine. I'm not saying that you wouldn't say those things, but it feels like dialogue. We're also going to get more to this where a thing that the show does where it's almost like they have an idea of what they want to do and then they have to go back and figure out how to get there.
Mm.
And we'll get to more of that later, if that makes any sense.
Two things. I think with the dialogue thing, as someone who didn't watch the first show until 2017, that's just how Sex and the City was too. But I think we have this nostalgia for it. And also like TV writing has become so much more, I think, realistic that I think it's funny because they're trying to just give people what they want, which are these like little quotes and things that they remember. And then also Michael Patrick King kind of talks about how they said like, oh, we dug ourselves in a hole with the I'll see you in 5 years thing with Aiden. And then we had to figure out how to do it. So I think they do that where they do something and they're like, all right, now how do we make that happen?
Sure. And we get Carrie telling Shu to not even look at her velvet, whatever that is.
Yeah, I said Carrie is showing off her wardrobe to Shu and then not letting Shu touch anything. That's rude. Yeah.
And we get an alarm that the kitchen door is open and Carrie running through her massive home while on the phone.
Okay, so remember how I said sex? Remember how I said. Throughout, we couldn't help but wonder our first seasons. I often talked about how Sex and the City would always echo things that were happening in my real life. Right now at work, we have this alarm that will just not stop going off. Like, it does this. And we've called the company and we've tried everything. And they're like, oh, one of your sensors is just off or isn't working or is malfunctioning. But it goes off probably once every half hour.
Huh. Is it loud?
It's loud enough that you can faintly hear it. If you're over sitting right by where it is, it's kind of loud. And they usually take care of it pretty quickly. I wouldn't say it's noticeable for everyone else because it's New York City. The windows, the doors are open. So like you hear sounds anyway.
Gotcha.
But I always want it to be kind of like a Coyote Ugly thing where like when the alarm goes off, the whole staff has to do some fun dance. But no one has signed on for that.
And we get an address of 8 Gramercy Park West and that her identifying code is Carrie and Aiden.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. Which I get it. She's all in. But there's part of me that's like, okay.
Yeah, and this is when we really see the whole house, and I just thought, gosh, this house is big. I mean, it's
enormous. And they talk
about it quite a bit on the Writer's Room podcast, and they talk about how, like, for New York standards, this is a mansion, and it was intentional that they wanted to make this really big to show that it's just Carrie in here by herself, but she's kind of committed to, like, making this a home with Aiden and maybe his kids someday.
And this is the third time this has happened. Please don't send the police again. And then we have a really quick slip and fall.
Mm-hmm.
And this feels, it's as though just to let her say the line, I've fallen and I can't get up.
Yeah.
But she's only hurt her finger.
Yeah. It's once Miranda gets here, apparently the only thing that hurt is her pinky finger. And this scene, I don't know, immediately reminded me of the time Miranda came over with the bagels.
Yes. It was Carrie that came over with the bagels because Miranda couldn't get up.
Right. That was it. Sorry.
So it was an interesting switcheroo. And it's not the same, obviously, but it did feel like an echo.
Yeah. And just something that I noticed is that Miranda is holding a coffee cup. And that coffee cup is from Hutch and Waldo, which is an Australian coffee shop. They have 2 locations in the city. The only reason I know this is because one of them is right by my apartment. And the other one is on Irving Place. So it actually makes sense geographically, like that she would have stopped there before going to Carrie's apartment in Gramercy.
And this is one of those moments that I talk about how it feels like they wanted to get to a thing. So we had to fit. Because now we're going to get into, you know, that she had sex with a nun and you deflowered the Virgin Mary. And that's such a setup. And I'm not complaining about it. I'm just saying it's funny. It's like, we want to say that she deflowered the Virgin Mary. How do we make this happen?
Well, first we have to say Carrie's door sensors are off so Miranda can say her sensors are off too.
Right. Yes, absolutely. And Miranda gets a text from Mary and we have a no sorry sister one night stand.
Can I ghost a nun? It would be a holy ghost.
Yeah. And it's sort of like laughing about having dinner at Tavern on the Green, which I get it. Like it's a very touristy thing. But as someone who's eaten there a couple of times, I did enjoy myself both times.
And my boyfriend had his bar mitzvah there. So.
Yeah, I haven't gone in forever, but I'd like to go again.
Yeah, I do. We know some people that work there now.
Oh, do we? Okay.
But I've heard, I don't know this for real, like everything in New York City, people are like, it's different now. And I'm like, oh,
sure.
Okay.
Yeah. And Carrie isn't sure if it's worse that she slept with a nun or a tourist.
I mean, the only reason why I do think Carrie and Miranda are both like such, they love New York City. So, but I don't know. Tourism kind of keeps the city going. So don't poop
on
sure.
It. And we're in the kitchen with Lisa, who's talking about Michelle Obama and she wants all the wine.
Yeah. And she comments on Herbert having 2 buttons undone, but he's doing it because he's cool.
Right. And we found out there's going to be a reception at Red Rooster on Saturday night. And it was either that or a TikTok account.
Yeah. Red Rooster is Marcus Samuelson's restaurant on 125th and Lenox in Harlem.
I've never been there, but I've walked by it many a time. And I do think they have a TikTok account anyway.
Oh, they have a Red Rooster now in Miami.
You bring that up just for the next time we're in Miami, we can stop by?
Well, no, I'm just saying if any of our listeners are in Miami and want to stop by Red Rooster, they can go in Miami.
And Gabrielle is making dumplings and has Eugenia with her. It's a collector's item. Lisa wants her to move it away from the meat, so something is definitely going to happen to this doll before the episode is over.
Right, and I think that's just like a... And just like that version of American Girl doll.
Sure. I wasn't sure about that.
Yeah.
And why does the doll smell like pork?
Well, I'm assuming they're making pork dumplings.
Okay.
Because Gabrielle was the one making dumplings. So I'm assuming they're pork dumplings.
And we have kind of a quick, you know, her asking Herbert if his firm has connection to the Obamas and Herbert telling her to stick up for her vision.
Mm-hmm.
And then Junior gets home and says he's going to order a pizza and eat in his room. And Lisa says that's a no. I do want to just quickly, Ari Nicole Parker, I've enjoyed for two seasons now. Something about her performance in this episode I love so much.
Me too.
And I don't know if it's just her delivery, like the way that she... I have some lines written down later that I just am a tiny bit obsessed with her performance. Like, she's just so fun and so like quick. I'm really, really digging her here.
I think she's just so grounded. And
maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, I think
just,
what it
like,
is like in the first couple seasons, we didn't know who she was. Well, the first season, we were just meeting her for the first time. And I think they were trying to like set up who she is and this and that.
Right.
And then they wanted to, you know, give her a chance to be extravagant and have all the things that the other ladies had for years. That we got to watch and grow. And I think now it's like, okay, we know who she is. We know she dresses amazing. We know she's super successful. Now let's just see her live her life.
Yeah. And he hates Chinese food and she hates that attitude. Once again, just the way that she says the line, I just enjoy it so much. And Herbert puts Junior's hat on and says it's cool. And I really like Gabrielle's, like, her shade is very, very fun to watch.
Yeah.
And now we're at Lincoln Center and Giuseppe and Anthony are there and Anthony is singing That Girl.
Yeah, the That Girl theme song to Carrie, which I thought was cute because I felt like that was something that Mario Cantone would do to Sarah Jessica Parker in the real world. And also it was kind of fun to just remind us that he's a little bit older than Giuseppe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Anthony is surprised Carrie isn't with Aiden. And she says he's out of town. And I was like, wait, she hasn't told everyone? But once again,
this
it hasn't
was where
been
that
I was, long.
This was where, yeah, my confusion was coming into play here. Where I was like, what? Is this the next day? Like, I don't understand why this is happening. Because it is interesting. And we'll get more of it as we continue their conversation. But we find out from Rock and Lily that Charlotte isn't coming. The dog walker quit because he didn't feel trusted. And she has to find a doggy daycare. And I do like Lily's line of like her favorite child's needs are more important.
Yeah. And kind of quickly back to what you were talking about with Anthony is, you know, we like Mike and I haven't actually seen each other, like gone out in a very long time, but we have like a text thread. So we're pretty up to date with what's going on in each other's lives. I can't imagine Carrie having a text thread with anyone. So unless she's with that person, she probably hasn't filled them in.
And that's true. And I do want to get more to their relationship a little bit later, but I think we'll save it for a little bit later. Because first of all, I do want to say that they're not heading into... They're heading into the opera, which probably does also have ballet. But I was a little unsure. I think they just placed it there because that's such an iconic building.
Sure.
Because the opera is really in the other building. The ballet is really in the other building. The ballet's in, I don't want to say their names, but it's another building that's to the left of where they are headed. They're headed into the Met, which, like I said, is the opera house. Once again, they probably have ballet there sometimes too. But I did sort of wonder if we set it there just because they wanted to be in the Met.
No hugs for your gunkle.
Yeah, and they say no. And Anthony asks how she doesn't know how long Aiden is out of town. And she says they'll figure it out. And Anthony is clearly not satisfied.
And then Giuseppe starts questioning if Carrie has been writing, because as we remember... I forgot, but Giuseppe,
I forgot as well.
Giuseppe is a poet, and
yes.
Carrie says that she hasn't been writing because she's been consumed by the house, and on the Writer's Room podcast, you know, they go into the last time Carrie really stopped writing was when she went to Paris with Alex, and I think that it's just a reminder that when Carrie is lost in a man, she stops writing.
And it's funny because I'm fine with that being a point and I'm fine with him bringing it up. It isn't a thing that I'd ever really entertained before. It seemed like
neither.
She wrote when she wrote and she didn't write when she didn't write. Like it didn't ever seem like it was that emotional to me, but I'll take it. That's not an argument against. That was just me being like, oh, okay. That's interesting information to have.
No, Michael Patrick King, that's not what you meant.
Yeah. And the ballet starts and Anthony asks which one Lily is into, and we have a Mr. Nude illusion and it's ballet, not Grindr.
Yeah.
Which I'm kind of like, okay.
Well. I wrote, it looks like Giuseppe might be into him as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, also on the writer's room, we also learned that this was a real, I mean, obviously it's choreographed, but for this episode, you know, they had choreographer, these are dancers from the New York City Ballet. That's all.
And we don't meet this guy, so no. I don't know who he is, so we'll deal with that when we actually get to him.
But Lily is obsessed.
I wrote rapt.
Yeah, I have never seen someone just so captivated by a performer other than myself when I saw Christine Ebersole as Edie Beale in Grey Gardens on Broadway.
Which totally makes sense. Mm-hmm. We have a quick scene where we go to Charlotte outside a doggy daycare, and it's a cute shot of her head framed in the doggy doorhouse.
Yeah.
Or the doghouse doorway.
It's called Astrogruff Doggy Daycare. It's not real.
No. And it's a quick kind of silly scene where the guy just says, oh no, a bunch of times. And I get what they're going for, but I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's fine.
But I like the delivery. And it was ridiculous because we realized that Peanut was there first.
Is right there next to him.
In the stroller.
Covered. Yeah. I went with it. It was very silly.
You don't want to hear my side? Oh no. I loved his line reads, actually. Kudos.
And now we're back at the ballet and Lily gives an immediate standing ovation. And I guess he does smile at her.
Yeah. So, okay.
So she's going to go backstage and say hi. And we get out in the lobby where Anthony is questioning Carrie again, getting to the point where Carrie says that she likes the ballet because there are no words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she clearly doesn't want to talk about it.
Correct. And Rock says there's no one there, but there's still a line for the bathroom. So they're going to go get a cheeseburger.
That sounds good. And Giuseppe sure. tells Anthony not to be so him all the time. Think first.
Which I thought was good advice.
Yeah,
sometimes
I
we shouldn't
it.
Be us so much all the time.
Yeah, and
I recognize there are times that I am me too much.
Patti LuPone, are you listening?
Yeah, well, admit you were wrong at some point. That's an important thing for a person to be able to do.
Yeah, and you see Giuseppe and Anthony listening and growing from each other, which I love.
I will also say that I was kind of so-so on Giuseppe last season. I find him so adorable this season. I don't know what the change is. I don't know if I've just like given in, but I definitely this season was like, you are just adorable.
I think it's the same thing with LTW. I think when we, a lot of times in this universe, when we meet these characters, they are over the top. They're ridiculous. They're just showing us all their quirks. And then once we really get to know them and they can be grounded in who they are, then we're able to just see who they are and their personality and their humanness comes out.
And this is a quick scene with Carrie back with her cat at the house and her getting out the magic eight ball, which is where we get the outlook good.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a weird sound cue off camera that I think is going to take us somewhere.
Okay.
But it's not, because now the phone is ringing and it's Aiden and it's nighttime.
Yeah. And this is, there are two moments in this, there's a few moments that make me uncomfortable in this episode. And I will say this one is one of them.
I just didn't know how much I don't need to know what Aiden having an orgasm sounds like.
Well, he's had three beers, misses her so much, he aches for her.
And I guess we don't have to get into the details. The one detail that I do is that when he like honks the horn, which I know is supposed to be funny, but yeah. He does then say, I may have shit my pants a little, but don't break the mood. I'm like, well, you just said you might have shit your pants. So
yeah,
not sure you're helping with the mood.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's trying to have phone sex with her. He wants her to touch herself. And he honks the horn, which is very Sex in the City, I wrote. And they even acknowledge that on the writer's room that like that's how things work there. And he may have shit his pants. Yeah, I don't know if I want you to continue like with your hand in your pants if there's poop in there, Aiden.
And I guess, you know, I didn't even necessarily catch this theme here, and maybe I got it a little more later. So maybe I should save it for later. But I guess the point is sort of made that if they're not supposed to be in communication, he has decided to break that rule and it's okay because he's decided to do it.
Yeah, and I think that that's important is like, it kind of gives, I think for a long time, everyone looked at Aiden as like the good guy, the one that got away, the one that Carrie messed it up with. And I think it's important for us to see that Aiden has faults, and maybe that'll be what this is a bit more. I mean, all I wrote is Aiden is whacking it in the car and Carrie is just laying there because Shu is watching.
Yeah, that little kitty's staring, so she badly fakes it.
Yeah.
And we have Miranda's phone with a picture of Brady, which I guess is all the Brady we're going to get in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a message from Mary and a picture in panorama. Like, just the framing of that picture is so strange.
But I feel like that's how Mary would send a selfie.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's honestly, do you follow Rosie O'Donnell on Instagram?
I do. Yeah.
She posts selfies like that all day long. Like, Rosie will just post the selfie and be like, new glasses, but it's, or she'll post like a picture of the box the glasses came in to let you know she's getting new glasses. Rosie, if you're listening, I love you. Never change.
We love you, Rosie. We really do. And she leaves Carrie a voicemail so that she can say the words that Sister Mary Tourist has invited her to meet in Central Park to ride the carousel.
Okay, ride the carousel then, yeah. Miranda. Live a little.
She's a tourist, yeah. And we have a new bed arriving, and so Ravi is also here, and he's 2 hours early, and the guys are here, but he only sees her, which I'm like, well, you're not going to like fuck with the guys there, right? Like, you, I want you to see the guys are there too.
Also, he's doing too much.
Yeah. And I guess we're going to, I guess it's going to make a little bit, because even in this moment when the guy says, it's like a movie, I was like, is it like a movie? But we're setting up that this is going to be like a movie. So I think that he's sort of doing the movie acting.
Yeah. I think he's doing too much because he knows he's going to let her down again.
Yeah. And even commenting on her hair being shorter.
Mm-hmm. Well, the next morning they wake up and he tells her they have a Jean Georges reservation, but he just has one little movie thing.
And the sooner they go, the sooner it's just the two of them. I've never been to Jean Georges and I don't really have the urge to.
Yeah, I haven't either. They have the Marc Hotel is not far from where I live, and there's the Jean Georges restaurant there. I can never say it right. So I'd walk by that. I've been to the Tin Building, which is Jean Georges.
So we have a shot of her. This is the shot of her emerging from the building that was in the trailer, but we don't see that he's there in the trailer, but he's there with the wow, wow. Did I mention wow? And the little thing that he has to do involves them getting in a very crowded van with Artold and others.
Mm-hmm. They just have one scout
a movie
thing.
Location. Yeah.
She's not happy.
And I don't know. She says that they should follow in the car, and he says the captain has to stay with the crew. But I kind of want to be like, you can drive behind them, though. Like, you don't have to be in the van with them. And she doesn't need to be there for this. Like, this, if we're going to get to it's him trying to share what he does with her, I guess that I get that, but it doesn't feel like that's what this is.
Well, I think it also makes for really good, like a really good framing shot, having her smushed in that car. I think that's
what
this
is. Yeah, for sure. And he's complaining about someone wearing perfume, which the lady in the back says she hasn't worn in 5 years.
But it's Seema, and it's, wouldn't you know Seema wears perfume?
Right. Yeah, it's all kinds of weird. And we're looking at a Mr. Burton's Instagram, and there are 15 warning emojis, and we get the, it's a witch hunt.
Yeah, little doggies being canceled. And Lisa suggests that Charlotte just pay for the MRI, but Charlotte doesn't want to because Richard Burton would never do that. And then we look over, and Richard Burton is eating Eugenia.
And it's the perfect line. Once again, there's another line reading that I just love so much, where she says, like, would you pay to make it go away? And Charlotte says, no, I would not. And she responds, no, you would not. Got it. Once again, just a line reading that I love so much. And yeah, it's a very Sex and the City thing. We're like, Mr. Burton would never hurt a soul. And then we cut to him, you know, tearing a doll apart.
Right.
Which he's not really. The doll ends up being fine.
Yeah, and the doll smells like pork, so that's probably.
And Charlotte feels like the mother from The Bad Seed. And I will say, the dog actor playing Mr. Burton has a very well-timed bark.
Yeah, and also, he's fine. He didn't do anything. He's sweet baby.
And we're on a very nice pier that clearly does not say annihilation.
No, but, and they're not going to make it for lunch, but he'll move it to dinner.
And that's fine. And there's a slight mention that we're predicting rain. And then we get to Carrie getting a call from Seema. And this is Carrie wondering if it's sweet that he wants to share his work with her. And it's a quick conversation to get us to a bridge in Central Park where Charlotte approaches to say that even though she doesn't think it happened, she will exchange information and pay for the MRI.
And then another dog off leash, who kind of looks like Richard Burton, comes out of nowhere, and we realize, oh, it wasn't Richard Burton this whole time.
Yes, this is all the proof we need that the lady mistook this dog for Mr. Burton. And yeah, Charlotte expects the inflammatory post to be taken down. Yeah, that's it. That was that whole storyline.
And then we get back to what Ravi calls the perfectly broken down pier.
I'm going to assume this pier doesn't really exist. I think this is CGI.
Yeah, it looked like too much of a hazard and liability to still exist. There are some like piers like this on the West Side Highway, but there's no planks on them. You just see the posts.
Yeah, the East River has a few too. There are a few, but they're all fenced off. And yeah, and Seamus, this is where the couple will realize they can't go on, which Seamus says art imitates life. And this is just going to get us to, you know, he lost track of time and
you lost track of me.
Or maybe I did. And she knows it was a lot to ask for him to come. We have a lot of movie talk with, you know, he'll always love her. Great last line, roll credits. And then Artold can pick up his stuff. And I will say he gets the last line with, well, at least it didn't rain.
And now Lisa and Herbert are at the Red Rooster.
Yeah, we have the ubiquitous spritz. Everyone's drinking a spritz. Just those are very in right
spritzing.
Now.
Spritzing.
Yeah. And there's a bit of a moment between Lisa and Chauncey before she goes back to see the ladies.
Yeah, Carrie, Charlotte, and Miranda are there. Carrie lets them know she had phone sex, but she stopped because the kitty was watching. Curious eyes.
Yeah, and she faked it. And we have a moment of Aiden and I's, our sex life is the most honest thing about us, which is an interesting line.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about that.
And it gets an awe, and then Anthony arrives and announces himself as the gay Harlem Globetrotter.
Well, do you want to know what my autocorrect said? And I just see it now. They gay them Globetrotter.
Mine changed his name to another.
Oh, yeah. Mine just says Anthony arrives. They gay them Globetrotter.
And Herbert announces that his college a cappella choir is singing as a thank you for everyone coming. Their name is Five Alarm Choir.
And I'm assuming that this is actually Christopher Jackson singing.
Yes, okay. I'm sure that it is.
The Five Alarm Choir is not a real choir. I did look that up. All we need to know is Harry is obsessed. Harry is the number one fan of the Five Alarm Choir. Maybe that's where Lily gets her enthusiasm from.
Maybe. Yeah, he's a big fan. I also, this is such a little thing, but I'm not convinced that Lisa saying it's his college a cappella choir or it's his college a cappella group was actually said live. I feel like that was dropped in later so we would know who this group is.
I feel like a lot of this was because you can see some very obvious lip syncing happening.
Yeah. Yeah. And we have a moment with Anthony and Carrie where, you know, he asks to not be cut out. And here's where I kind of thought about, if you think about it, Anthony was not Carrie's friend. Mm-hmm. Anthony was Charlotte's friend. Stanford was Carrie's friend. So I do sort of see in this moment, oh, I can see a world in which Anthony and Carrie haven't had a lot of interaction with each other.
Yeah, and because he says, like, please don't cut me off. It took so long to get in. And you realize, oh. And I forgot Anthony and I just forgot. Like all of this.
Yeah. I mean, it was sort of a weird, the moment of me kind of remembering like, oh, right. That was the background of this. And, we also have our first and just like that for real.
Please don't cut me out. It took me so long to get in.
I would never cut you out.
Wouldn't you? You were pretty mad.
I was. And just like that, I'm not. Apology accepted.
Another thing that it took me a while to realize, there's no voiceover in this episode. There's no beginning. There's no ending. There's no voiceover happening in this entire episode.
Weird.
Right? It is unusual. And we're going to get to what I think is the point and what they kind of say is the point. And, you know, Carrie saying that he's not the only one with doubts. He's just the only one that says it out loud. And then we have Chauncey is upset about the Glee Club.
Yeah, it's not cool. But then LTW finds out that Chauncey worked at the White House.
Wants to know which White House. Yeah. And Harry continues to be really excited about Herbert singing.
Yeah, Harry just still loves the a cappella group.
And then Charlotte and Miranda are having dessert and Mary sends a text. And we have this nun is in love with me. And I see where this could be going in Miranda's mind. The idea of like, oh no, this person's obsessed with me. Mm-hmm. And me kind of knowing like, well, this is Sex and the City-ish. So she's probably not. But I get where the storyline is going. It makes sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah, she wants Miranda to meet her in Times Square by the M&M store. She just saw Wicked.
Yeah, and what am I going to do? And Carrie says, give my regards to Broadway, which is a very cheesy line, but I like it. And Sarah Jessica Parker makes it work.
And Miranda shows up and Mary is in full Wicked merch.
Yeah.
With personalized M&Ms.
Custom M&Ms, but they're just M&Ms because it's for Miranda and Mary.
Oh, I just got that now that they're not actually custom. Because at the M&M store, you can make custom M&Ms.
You can make custom ones. But yeah, I think the idea is these aren't actually custom. They're just M&Ms.
Oh. And Mary wants Miranda to spend the night.
And Miranda tries to give a speech, but gets hit in the head.
By the giant King Kong, which I've seen in Times Square, that King Kong.
Now, just a small nitpick. We then have the line, can we talk over there? And they don't move at all. Miranda says, can we talk over there? And then they just continue their conversation. It's fine, but they don't move even kind of. And the whole, like, don't leave God for me.
And I think what I liked about this moment is we realize that, like, Mary isn't as clueless as we all think.
I agree. And I think it's an interesting turn of events for Mary to be like, I'm not going to leave God. I'm married to him. And I think that this makes her a really fascinating character in a couple of ways. One being, was this intended to be like a one weekend stand where she's like,
look, I always knew this person was somewhere inside of me. And now I've met her. Thanks to you.
And I think it's a really interesting concept of like, is this woman going to go back to her small town in Canada and be a nun again? And maybe this was the one time she ever experiences this with a human, with another human being. And maybe that's enough for her.
Well, you could have had that experience with someone, but you said no.
It's true. And I wrote, it's a kind of lovely moment.
Yeah, it was great.
And it's not Rosie's singing, but just, yeah, don't sing it anybody ever. It's never a good idea.
Because I knew you.
And it's a great song, but you could also, she could just say, because I knew you. You don't have to sing it.
And then she goes, that's from Wicked.
Which is funny. I get the moment is good. The moment works. And it's a very funny moment.
But I also love this. I will say I love this because Rosie loves Broadway.
Yeah, of course. And we have Carrie putting Shu out of the room.
Yeah.
And she was kind of like, whatever, bitch. Like, I feel like Shu kind of like looks over her shoulder like, fine, I don't need to be
there. I don't
want to
be you creepers, pervs. She was like, you guys are perverts.
And Carrie calls Aiden to confess. And she tries to start up some sex talk. And he waits too long. You got to immediately say, no, I'm in bed with my teenage son. Like, he had a bad night. He lets it go on just a beat longer than he should have.
Yeah, and then he's like, I'm in bed with Wyatt. I'm like, what is happening?
Yeah, and she quickly gets off the phone and the alarm goes off again. But before we get to that, I want to now circle back to the point that when he made the decision to have communication, it was fine. And he got to have the conversation that he wanted to have, which ended in me having to hear him have an orgasm. And in this situation where she's decided that she's going to break the rule and call him, it doesn't work out. Like, she's not going to get what she wants out of this. And in fact, she feels kind of humiliated, I think.
Mm-hmm. Also, I like that in the Mike Jensen world, you are the, they did that against you. That was a personal attack.
I just never knew how much I didn't need to hear it.
Yeah.
I never knew.
Also, in season one, didn't like Carrie deal with another alarm that wouldn't stop beeping? Remember she had that beep in her house that she couldn't figure out where it was
coming
from?
Moved into the house in Chelsea. Yeah. The constant beeping. That's funny. Interesting callback there, which I hadn't even thought about.
I think it's just because Carrie can't do technology. Yeah.
And now she can't sleep, so she gets up and I wrote, she goes to her desk looking out a window, which we saw this desk at the start of this episode, but it didn't hit me until this moment when she sits and opens her laptop that it's a very similar setup to her old apartment where she's at her table in front of a window and she opens up her laptop and writes, the woman wondered what she had gotten herself into. I guess we must hear her say this. Okay, so this is the voiceover. But the point is made that it's the first voiceover that's in the third person. So it's not her speaking as herself. It's her speaking as someone else. And I guess part of the point of that is supposed to be that she is so much dealing with these feelings that she can't even apply them to herself, that she almost has to put them outside of herself, which is helping her now to create this fiction, which is a thing that she's never dealt with before.
Wow.
And that's it. And, you know, we're running kind of long, so I don't know how much more we want to talk about it. I actually enjoyed this episode.
Me too.
I know people that did not enjoy it, which I'm always sort of like surprised and curious about. And what I tend to get is that people think that it's silly. And I guess my thing that I go back to is Sex and the City was pretty silly.
That's what and I think it's easier for me to see it because once again, I just watched all of it.
Right.
But yeah, I want to remind people like that show was silly.
And I think that one thing that I wouldn't mind is I don't need every for lack of a better word, like beautiful moment ruined by a, what they call a cream pie. Because he always talks about that on the thing of like, we set them up and then we throw a cream pie at them. And I'm like, sometimes I think we can have a moment. Like, I didn't need for Miranda to get hit in the head by the King Kong. And it's fine that she did. I'm not saying don't ever do that. But I feel like I don't need it every time we get to this for there to be a cutting someone off at the knees.
I did need that horn to honk, though.
100%. That's a moment that made sense to me. Yes, that was supposed to happen.
Or else we would have gotten a cream pie.
I know, that's also what I think every time he says it on the podcast. It's fine.
Mike, did you get a new microphone?
I did, yeah. I'm sure I've recorded with it before, but maybe not for the last season.
Do you think you're better than me now?
You don't want to know how much I spent on this microphone. Okay. It like hurts my stomach how much I spent. Okay. But I like to think that my music sounds better because of it.
He just wants to make me look bad on the podcast.
Your microphone works just fine. Thank you. I have two of those right behind me. So.
Okay, well, I only have one. So now, you know what else you have behind you?
Rosie.
Can you see her? I don't see her. No, I can't see her. I see what looks like a Tony Award. Do you have a Tony Award?
There's Rosie.
What is that Tony Award back there?
That is just a candle holder. It does look like a Tony Award. From here, yeah.
I thought you were famous and I didn't know it.
Let me grab it.
Oh, he's going to get it. Yeah. Yeah, it looks like a Tony Award. Hold on. Let me take a picture of this. Mike, because the people are going to want to know why I thought you had a Tony.
There we go. All right. So we'll be back next week.
Oh, wait. We couldn't help but just like that.
I couldn't help but wonder. I guess I couldn't help but wonder. I mean, the one that I just said is I couldn't help but wonder why Aiden even waited a beat before he was like, my son is right here.
Or why
he
answered.
Right.
Because, like, it's not a baby. Like, your teenage son will wake up when you're talking.
Also, like, you could leave the room.
Yeah.
Like, he's asleep.
I couldn't help but wonder why Seema smokes indoors. Like, on her, especially on her bed.
On bed. Yeah, that's a lot. Don't do that. There's a whole song about it.
Mm-hmm. Listen to Liza's version. I really like it.
Oh, I don't know that one. I'll have to check it out. All right. We'll be back next week.
Bye.
Bye. For more information, like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at We Couldn't Help But Wonder with no caps, no spaces, and no punctuation. You can listen to my other podcast, Mike and Vanya Can't Not, wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow Elise at Evie Castle and me at MikeJensen77. We would love it if you would share this podcast with someone, put up a link, or tell a friend. Take a moment and rate us on Apple Podcasts, or even better, write a review there. As always, take care of yourself, and let's take care of each other.
Been listening to Michael Patrick's King podcast.
Hello.
That was, you just stopped. You failed me.
Oh, no, I didn't mean to.
It's okay.
Yeah, on the what is that river called? The
East River?
Sure. What is that river on the east side called? Oh, the East River.
Oh, Mike is stupid.
It is true. Then he arrives and announces himself as the gay Harlem Globetrotter. Nope. Announces himself as the gay Harlem Globetrotter.
I couldn't help but... you're definitely going to add this at the end.
For sure.
Ooh.